Welcome back to Nothing Scarier Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Kayla.
And I'm Courtney.
And today is, it's already been spring for a hot minute, but we are, I'm super excited because we're going to talk about one of my favorite things.
I hope it's not this movie.
No, it's not. Definitely not this movie. But it plants. It's a spoiler. I mean, it's in the title, but yes. Plants.
We love plants. Stoked. Mm-hmm. We love plants.
We do love plants. I do want to give a trigger warning right at the top here. I might have forgotten the most important piece of this particular M. Night movie before I recommended that everybody watched it. So our trigger warning at the top here is that this movie does contain lots of scenes of suicide and folks ending their lives.
Yep. Yes, copious and graphic amounts of it.
Lots and lots of it. So definitely references to it, which could be distressing for some folks. If you are one of those folks, you can join us at the plant side, or we will see you next week. Please do whatever is best for your mental health and to stay happy and safe. That is our preference. So there's our trigger warning right at the top there. Yeah, I made you watch another M. Night movie.
Dog, every time I watch one of these movies, like I've seen most of them when they came out.
Yeah.
But every time I rewatch them, they're 10 times crazier and more unhinged than I fucking remember them being. And I spent a lot of time going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
like, this guy was like the guy for a while and was making these movies. And everybody's like, yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. M. Night. And I'm like, this guy is crazy. Yeah, this shit is unhinged.
Unhinged is the word. And I've read, I have now read multiple interviews with M. Night following the release of The Happening. And I'm not surprised. There was nothing surprising.
He's as unhinged as like, I guess I'm kind of a hypocrite because I really loved Malignant, which is a fucking unhinged movie, but it's like different kinds of unhinged. I don't know. Like he's like grandmas and shit watch like M. Night. I don't know, man. For some reason, his shit just hits my brainstem in a weird way. And I'm like, what is wrong with you?
His movies are Uncanny Valley movies. Like the whole thing is like almost how people might act, maybe like it's like a LaCroix but of human nature, like it's like barely there. You know what's trying to happen. And a lot of these movies came out in like my early adulthood or like late teens, and it's like, oh, it's what the fuck is human nature when you're fucking 17? Like, you don't know, you know, like. So I think maybe that's why they age a little flavorlessly or like shit's sharply.
Shit's just crazy.
Yeah.
He's not from planet Earth. He's just not.
We've had that discussion.
I know. We have. I think that's sick fan art.
Yeah, man. That's what I was thinking while, too.
Every time I watch these movies, I'm like, oh, yeah, that tracks. Makes sense.
This tracks. This is perfect.
Oh, fucking crazy. I am a little bit under the weather, so if I sound weird or if I like you hear a cough in the background, my bad. Sorry.
Yeah. But I'm here. Been down with being sick for down with the sickness for almost a week now. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm here for you guys, for the fans, doing it,
making you watch just classic cinema.
I love watching most of the time. Russo doesn't watch the movies with me, but he was forced to watch that movie with me, and his reactions were just as good. It was good.
Amazing. Huh. All right, well, our movie today is The Happening, as we've said we might have just been alluding to.
No, that's that preamble right there.
That's that preamble. So we watched The Happening for this week. The Happening was released in 2008. It is considered a science fiction thriller and was fully created by M. Night, who handled the writing, the directing, and producing. It features Mark Wahlberg, Zooey Deschanel, John Leguizamo.
Leguizamo.
Right? Yep, there you go. Ashley Cole Sanchez and Betty Buckley. The movie focuses on an unexplainable catastrophe triggering widespread suicide. So, movie premiered June 10th, 2008, which was just 3 days after I graduated high school.
I was already out in the adult world.
Yeah, really? And it fully released June 13th, 2008, so the week after. But all the trailers and the previews for this movie billed it as M. Night's first R-rated film. And it was fully like... The trailers and all of that were created to make it seem like a full-ass horror movie, not like a twisty thriller or like a science fiction situation. Like, they did that on purpose. He's responsible. It didn't just, like, happen. Like, they set us up for the disappointment.
He's great at marketing and, like, a concept. And that's about it.
I think,
you know what
I
mean?
He's good at marketing.
Or like a shot.
Not what he did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, well, we'll tell them it's this, but it's not. Shocker.
Hey. And we're just going to pretend like I never did that because I've got some info. But yeah. So it was not all of that to say. And it was released to pretty immediate negative reviews.
Yeah.
And like, this is where things get weird with M. Night again. We've already talked about his backtracking after critical review after The Village and him basically being like, well, you didn't get it. Or like, it was supposed to be this. Or like, I think it was like the studio, they're the ones at fault for advertising it in that way, which honestly, I don't know a whole lot about. I know that sometimes like marketing doesn't match the movie's tone in a negative way, but this is a pattern that seemed intentional based on early reviews and then how he changes his tone in post-release reviews. So that story of like, I didn't know what they were doing doesn't stick again. And this is after, this is after The Village. This is after Lady in the Water.
Nobody saw that.
Which was fucking terrible. after those two is when this movie is coming out. So he's hot off some bullshit. And people are starting to take a more critical view of even the ones that everybody was like, it was so good. And being like, was it? Was it really?
He rode that goodwill off of The Sixth Sense. Right? That was him, right?
Yeah, and Signs, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I don't. Signs was already a fucking misstep. I get it as a concept.
But yeah, it seems like for The Happening, he was at it again with backtracking. At first, M. Night called The Happening the scariest thing he had ever created previous to the release. So he is trying to hype it. But as the movie came out to more and more critical reviews, he changed his story, leaning into the theory that the majority of the viewers just didn't get that it was supposed to be bad.
Oh, you did that on purpose? You totally did that on purpose? Oh,
yes,
okay.
That was the story that we just didn't get it. And so
M. Night's an amazing satirist. Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, and he's stuck to that story. So in a 2019 interview with Vulture while promoting one of the, I think it was Glass that had just come out. He stood up for The Happening, saying that its critical reception was because of its intended tone. He argued that the film had aimed to embody the essence of the best B-movie that you'll ever see, likening its humor to that in classics like The Blob, trying to say that that's what he was going for. He's also mentioned that he was going for a feeling of The Birds and how that was just like, it was off kilter and this, that, and the other thing. And
if he did that deliberately, he failed.
Yes.
I'm a B-movie connoisseur, baby.
Yeah.
You fucking failed doing that. So don't, either way, you fucking suck.
So he acknowledged that the humor in The Happening may have been misunderstood by audiences due to the inconsistency in its delivery.
Oh,
which sounds more like... He was trying to be like, well, the people delivering the lines didn't like it.
Was it a comedy when those two children got blasted in the face by a shotgun? Though that was funny. That was like a horror comedy.
Yeah.
That's what that was supposed to be.
Yes.
Shush. Shush your butt.
So he says it's due to inconsistencies in delivery, stating that that's why viewers couldn't see it, because it was inconsistent. But if it had been consistent, then...
I mean, I don't know. Like, Mark Wahlberg is Mark Wahlberg in every movie he's in. Mm-hmm. He does do some good work. I'll give him that. Zooey Deschanel's the same person in every movie she's in. Mm-hmm. John Leguizamo is a fucking G.
Yeah.
Okay. So he has like all-star pack casts at this point because people still want to do his movies, and he's blaming them. And it's like, I don't think that's it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's it.
Yeah. So Wahlberg did come out later to say that it's the worst thing that he's ever done. But you can't, I think the quote was basically, it's the worst thing that he's ever done, but you can't blame him because he had an opportunity to like for once not play a cop or a crook. And he's like,
he's a really nice teacher.
I just wanted to play a different role.
Yeah, I just wanted to play a nice guy. Maybe he's just not that nice of a person. He was trying. Like, yeah. He just seemed like, I don't know, his character was like, I'm just a really nice guy. He was trying.
Everything was trying. So fucking flat in that movie. Like, it was just not the vibe. But there's also a different interview. I'm not going to read it in its entirety, but I do want to read an excerpt of it. Because what the fuck? Okay. So this is Review Graveyard is where I found this. So I honestly wasn't like it's in a graveyard somewhere, right? So like the dates and the normal stuff, it's missing from it. But the interviewer goes, can you say more about your new movie? And this isn't The Happening. You'll figure it out. It's for Paramount Pictures. It's called The Last Airbender. It's not an original of mine for the first time. It's based on a Japanese anime, which it's not.
No, it's not.
It's the fucking it is. Not.
No.
The title of the show is Avatar, The Last Airbender, but James Cameron is doing that. We actually tried to get that title, but it pre-existed in his film that he has for his movies. So James Cameron was obviously working on Avatar, you know, the different situation. But M. Night was saying, I'm going to do this movie based on a Japanese anime. Absolutely not based on a Japanese anime.
It's an American fucking animation.
Yeah, like it. And was trying to say that Avatar, The Last Airbender in its entirety was already, it's fucking weird. But he continues to go on, right? Like, and he wasn't asked to go on, but he continues to go on. He could have stopped there and he didn't. He says, I've always toyed with doing a Harry Potter. I've been offered all of these fantasy movies and struggled over the decision of whether or not to do them. I really like that format of a movie. I think I could do an interesting version of one of those. I don't see them that way, the way that they were made. I see them in a different way, and I've been waiting for the moment to do one. So the whole interview, he's trying to be like what he says in the interview is M. Night being like, me, a human, and what I make is what people like, even when it's bad, because that's on purpose, because people just like what I do. Like, that's the whole tone. It's very like, I see it in a different way, and I'm before my time. And like,
isn't like The Lady in the Water kind of like a fantasy?
Kind of, but it was like a full ass fucking flop. Like, it was so bad.
Nobody, like, yeah.
But the whole story is, like, very thinly veiled. Like, I found a sprite in the pool, and she has to find the person that's going to write the one story that's going to save the world.
Oh, it's like a self-insert, like, fanfic.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he inserts himself into every fucking movie, right?
Yeah. Like,
but this one in particular, like, this interview was rough. Like, it's a lot of him... Like, you don't ask people why they like a cheeseburger. They just like a cheeseburger. And, like, he tries to say when speaking about The Happening, because it's, like, bouncing around with all of the stuff in Avatar as this next one coming out. He's trying to say, like, with The Happening that there wasn't an agenda that he was following. But at several points later in the interview, he was like, oh, yeah, that was intended. Oh, yeah, that's how we planned it. And it's like, sir, is there an agenda or is there not an agenda? Are you a cheeseburger that people just like because they like you? Or are you maybe
I think he thinks of really cool shots and stuff. Because motherfucker can compose a shot. I will give him that.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't come up with a thread to get to all these other shots. And he doesn't understand how normal people act.
Or talk.
Or, yes. And I'm just like, why? Okay, yes. Dog. Sure. Yes. Whatever.
It's just like he's, I have an idea and it's the best idea. And if you don't get it, he's there's something artiste. Wrong with you.
I'm an like, artiste. Yeah. I have a vision.
But back to the happening. Like his,
I like how all these episodes always just deteriorate and us being like, what are you fucking doing?
It did make $163.4 million U.S. with a $60 million budget, which is not nearly as much as Signs for sure. And actually, Avatar did have a higher grossing, but I think that's because he took a already beloved
like, everybody property. Was super excited and saw it on the first weekend and went, don't go see it.
Yes, so fucking... Sorry, I'm revisiting that horrible time.
Yeah, it's not good, guys.
It has a... The Happening has a 18% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 5 out of 10 on IMDb, and a 2 on Letterboxd. There are some holdouts for people who actually like this movie. Right. And I was honestly surprised because typically I am in line with this particular reviewer. But our boy Ebert decided you want him to go left and he's going to go right. Like he, I don't understand, but this is, I'm going to read you two paragraphs because he fucking loved it. It was a 3 out of 4 stars on his site. I'm just going to read it, right? So he says, and this is in the middle, it's not how it starts, but too uneventful for you, not enough action. For me, Shyamalan's approach is more effective than a smash and grab plot mongering. His use of the landscape is disturbingly effective, with performances by Wahlberg and Deschanel bringing a quiet dignity to their characters. The strangeness of starting a day in New York and ending it by hiking across a country field is underlined. Most of the other people we meet, not all, are muted and introspective. As if they had been half expecting some sort of event as this. And later in the review, I suspect I'll be in the minority in praising this film. It will be described as empty, uneventful, and meandering. But for some, it will weave a spell. It is a parable, yes, but it is also simply the story of these people and how their lives and existence have suddenly become problematic. We depend on such a superstructure to maintain us that one or two alterations could leave us stranded and wandering through a field if we are that lucky.
Again, the concept is scary. I will give you that. But I also love a long, boring, slow burn horror movie. I will watch that shit all day. That's not what's happening in this movie.
A quiet dignity to their characters?
Zoe Deschanel's character is the most...
empty.
I don't even know how to articulate how much I don't like that character.
Yes.
And Mark Wahlberg doing his best, just confused most of the time.
Yeah. You like took not, like two comedic actors and were like, would you like to be in a horror drama with critiques about plants?
And like, yeah, I mean, Homegirl's character, Alma or whatever, is so worried about like eating, sort of cheating on her husband or whatever. Like, this is not the time for this. What is going on?
No. And like,
and it's I just guess. All of his movies are like if like a 7-year-old wrote a movie. Yeah. Kind of, like yeah, yeah, like yeah, helped yeah. like their dad, helped like their uncle from I don't know where, from outer space write a movie.
Yeah, I mean like you said, like the concepts are typically interesting, but the in-depth dive into the concept is not, and the delivery is like what the fuck. Like the idea that there would be, going back, a village in the woods that is isolated from people because there's monsters in the woods. And we said this when we did watch that movie. That's cool. That is also just an idea. And like, you can be an idea person and not able to build and execute. That's fine. Like, that's how lots of people think.
Just be a producer, dog.
Just have an idea. Have an idea and let somebody else fucking fill it in. Crazy. It's crazy shit. I do have some fun facts because why not?
We love a fun fact.
Mark Wahlberg's line, "Be scientific, douchebag," was fully improvised. No surprise.
That was the Boston. He's from Boston? I don't know. I think he's from Boston. That was that coming out.
Be scientific, douchebag. Douchebag.
You fucking douchebag.
It was originally titled, The Happening was originally titled The Green Effect. But Shyamalan struggled to sell the script following the exceptionally poor reception of Lady in the Water. Eventually, 20th Century Fox purchased the project and funded it. Amy Adams was originally considered for the role of Alma.
She's a really good actress. I don't know if she could have saved it.
I don't think she's there was amazing. Saving it.
Yeah.
Years later, Mark Wahlberg remarked that she had dodged a bullet by not participating in the film.
I like that he's just like, fuck it. Man, I'm fucking ashamed.
Because like I keep thinking about, so if M. Night's line is that he was trying to go for like a blob feel or like the birds feel, like the way that you then quote unquote fix this is to set it back in time then. You know what I mean? Like set it back and have your characters more in that time period instead of acting like they're in that time period in a fully different time period and also doing it poorly.
Both of those movies are very action filled and like a lot of shit happens. So mm-hmm. That's not what you were going for in your movie where Pollen is the bad guy, which is fine. You want to have like an unseen like killer or whatever, go for it. But mm-hmm. That's, you're not going for like a B movie, specifically those B movies effect. That's mm-hmm. Not what you're doing. So quit lying out your ass.
Yeah. Upon release, The Happening was pretty much universally torn apart by audiences and critics and was nominated for 4 Razzies, Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay.
Was Worst Actor Mark Wahlberg?
I didn't look up the specific.
It's got to be.
But lost to The Love Guru for most of those categories.
I mean, yeah, that tracks. I think The Love Guru probably deserved it.
Better or worse to be nominated for a Razzie and lose? Like, better to lose? Yeah? You don't actually want a Razzie?
I guess, man. If I won a Razzie, I would be there. I would accept my award.
Honestly, though, like, if you're leaning into it being so bad, then it's just not it. It's just...
Once you realize you're in a really bad movie, just fucking embrace it. You know what I mean? Just
like Wahlberg. He's just like, yeah. I was so bad. I just didn't want to be a fucking cop anymore. Like,
I was just trying. I just wanted to be a science teacher for a day. And like, if he was... this is my last time I'll harp on it. But like, if he was going for like a B movie, like haha, like satire situation, Mark Wahlberg is a pretty good comedic actor.
Yeah. And so is Deshna. Honestly, yeah.
They could have done it and it'd be funny and like deadpan at the same time.
Yes.
They both can do that. So that's not what you were trying to do.
Yes.
With, again, murdering children and graphic fucking deaths. Like, that's not what you were going for, dude. Like, not funny graphic deaths. I've seen funny graphic deaths.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, because there's the tone to it, right? Like, But
there's not an ounce of levity in that movie.
No, not, unless you're watching it to fucking laugh at how ridiculous it is. There's no...
Yeah, like intentional.
Yes.
Like,
it's not on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not laughing with you, we're laughing at you.
God, like, buddy. You were being very sincere. And I'm sorry that you were being sincere and you like shit the bed. But you can't just be like, ha ha, nah, dude. I was totally just fucking around.
I meant to shit the bed. You just don't get it.
I'm an auteur. Yeah. I'm an auteur. You don't understand me. Shut up.
Are you ready to recap this movie?
Yeah.
All right. So, again, stream of consciousness, me just watching this and typing away little notes. There are some things in here that I vaguely remember writing. We'll see if I say them. Let's find out. Movie opens with super scary clouds and an eerie violin playing. We get opening credits because it is the early 2000s still. I've said it before, I'm a fan of opening credits. I'm a fan of being pulled into a movie in a way that tells me that it's fake. Like, I'm here for it. I like that. This was just over the top still, though. Like, you're making a cloud menacing.
It was like screensaver clouds.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's supposed to be like, the winds are changing. But it also just, if I have to think about it too much, what the fuck?
Like a Dell laptop.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we're in the park and two women are sitting on a bench when they hear a person scream. Their conversation is very stilted. I fully forgot that actress's name. She's eventually in Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, I don't know her name. She's on Kimmy Schmidt too, right?
No, I don't think that's her.
No?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I'm getting the redheads mixed up. I like her.
I do too. There's also like, it was only a one sourcer, but apparently there was a conversation with her where she was asked what it was like to work on The Happening and she just like shuddered and didn't say anything. So
I bet it was crazy for the one scene she's
in. Yeah. So she goes very like stilted conversationally, just goes to her friend and goes, those people look like they're clawing at themselves. Is that blood?
Very calmly.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, we gotta get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, girl, not me. Like, I'd be like, hey, something's fucking wrong. Let's go. Like,
we would have both already been up and walking.
Why am I in a giant crowded park anyways? This is not my scene.
Well, and then the first line of dialogue is like, they're trying to decide whether or not they're gonna do something bad to the crippled girl. I'm like, you can't say that.
Yeah, her friend's like, I forgot where I'm at looking at her book, but somehow the other girl knows exactly what page she's on. Like, it's just,
you can't say that. You can't say that.
Yeah.
You just can't say that. I know it's 2008, but you can't say that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the one who's talking, her name, the one who is not talking, her name is Claire, the one that's reading the book. And Claire looks confused, starts repeating herself, asking the same question, and then takes her little hair stick thing out of her hair, which wasn't actually holding her hair in place anyways. But okay.
Her hair didn't fall down or anything.
At all. Didn't fucking move. Takes her hair stick out of her hair and stabs herself in the neck pretty graphically with it.
They like zoom in on it.
Yeah, they zoom in. They do a bunch of like sound design with it, which wouldn't. Anyways. And then we just like pan away to a different violent scene. And this scene, I think, is the best acted in the entire movie. That is the construction scene.
Because like, they act realistically.
Yes. Like, that whole group fucking delivered. Like, they did very, very well.
They're the only people that react naturally to any
Yes. So, we're in a construction scene, and there's a couple of guys standing around. They're joking. They tell a joke, and then a dude named Mackenzie falls off a roof. And so, they call for help, but then more workers start falling off the roof. And that scene is really, like, creepy and compelling. That's it.
That scene was in the trailer.
Yeah. That trailer was really creepy and compelling. That's it. Like, that's. So then we hard cut to a school. My next note here is, look, I don't know if you've seen this article about honeybees vanishing. Apparently honeybees are just disappearing. Mark Wahlberg is teacher. His name is Elliot, and he's trying to get his science class to participate in a conversation about disappearing bees. But he is doing it in a way where I don't know how to say it otherwise, other than like the character knows they're in a movie. Like, it's not natural. Mm. It's just not natural. So then Elliot teacher starts pestering a 15-year-old about his perfect face.
That is the weirdest shit ever. Yeah. The kid doesn't want to participate in fucking conversation. So he's like, you're really good looking. Yeah. You should get worried about being ugly later just to get the kid to answer a question.
Yeah. What sure would suck to be you peeking in high school. Do you want to talk to me about bees?
No.
Sir, no. Get fucked.
I'd be like, did you peek in high school?
Yeah. Like,
the fuck?
So it's just awkward and weird, and not because it's a high school, like, fucking science class. It's just, again, the whole, none of this is good. Unless I say it's good, none of it is good. Just take it. That's it. So principal, vice principal arrives to class, and all the teachers are being polled. into a conversation about a terrorist attack going on in New York. They already know the stages of this unknown, this situation that's happening. So there's confusion that's caused when you're affected, then odd movements. And then the third stage is fatal because if folks start killing themselves, like they just know this information very quickly. So they're going to be dismissing the students. Best friend of Elliot is also a teacher who's a math teacher, and his name is Julian. And basically he's like, it's good to be a math teacher because you can help people with statistics. And I was like, that's cute. That's cute.
He's trying.
He's trying. So he gets off the phone with his mom and he's like, my mom wants everybody to come out to her house because it seems safer and it's out of the city. I'm going to get my wife and my daughter and you should get Alma and you should meet us out there. They agree to do that. And as they're walking out of the school, Elliot has a really fucking awkward conversation with Julian, who's supposed to be like his best friend, saying, hey, Alma's acting a little bit odd, but like, don't comment on it. And then that immediately prompts Julian to be like, yeah, so I never want to say this because I'm your best friend, but like, remember when you got married, she was just crying. And just so you know, she's literally never going to be there for you. So you made a poor choice. And we're just having this conversation.
Julian just fucking hates Alma.
Yeah.
Julian's just like, why did you do that?
Yeah. And then after that comment, we cut to Zoe Deschanel's face, Alma. We're like 2 inches away from her face and she just looks confused as fuck. Like her direction was be confused.
That's pretty much, yeah, what she does.
So her Razor phone.
I loved my Razor. I said that. I was like, yes.
Is buzzing and some dude's trying to chat her up when Elliot comes home. So she's like acting like she's afraid of the phone, which is nobody acts like that when you're not being watched. What are you?
Just put it on mute, girl. Silent.
Why do we
not disturb?
I mean, it is 2008. We were still paying for nice ringtones. But hers was just buzzing. It was on vibrate. My note here says all of the dialogue is so odd. Everybody, they eventually like get her out of the house or whatever. And everybody is just chill at the train station that they're going to go meet Julian at. Nobody is like stressed or running or punching anybody or in a fight. So that's fun. They meet up with Jess, who is Julian's daughter, but Yvette, who is Julian's wife, is not there. Alma just like shows up and is like, hey, Julian.
And they both hate each other. Yeah. Julian's like, sup, bitch. He doesn't say that, but he's like, ugh. And she's like, ugh. And then she goes, I'm just going to get on the train. Thanks for buying our tickets. And like, takes the ticket.
There's that whole fucking, like, she just freaks out over fucking nothing situation because Julian's just like, hey, I'm really glad you chose to come. Which is like, not actually throwing shade.
But you can tell the tone. He's like, I wish you would have not come. And she already knows that he doesn't like her and she's already feeling guilty. So she just freaks out. They walk literally 2 feet away.
2 feet to have a discussion.
And she yells at Elliot. And you know Julian just like looking at her, yelling at him. Yeah. Did you tell him? Da-da-da-da. Well, he guessed. Yeah, because he's not a moron.
Yeah. And she right away throws a fit, says, I don't like to wear my feelings out there for everyone to see. And then says, I'm upset. I'm going to sit alone on the train.
Yeah.
And my note here is just, girl, go home. Just fucking go home. Then Elliot is mean to Julian, too, over the situation. Like, get fucked. This guy showed up to the train station. He invited you to go someplace you think is going to be safe at his mom's place. He mentioned getting the tickets was difficult. He did say, I'm really glad you chose to come. Maybe he was throwing shade, but also, would you prefer him just not say anything?
Like, he just doesn't like her. And he can't. It's like me when I don't like somebody. I try to be nice, but I can't.
he also has like this 8-year-old little girl that he's holding and like almost
he's
just
stressed out.
Fucking
he can't
crazy.
Get his, he can't. He's separated from his wife.
Yeah. And they just all shit on him. Like, thanks for taking care of us, but get fucked.
He's the only adult.
They're mean to him. They're all leaving the city. And then we cut back to... So they're taking a train from New York or wherever they're at to Philly to try and get away from the major city.
No, but they're in Philly. And they're trying to get away from the city. Because they're talking about how, like, New York got hit, but what are the odds that Philly is going to get hit too? But they're leaving the city anyway. They're from Philadelphia.
Okay. Well, they're on a train and they're leaving the major city to go someplace else.
Yes. Sorry, I don't know why cities. That was in my brain.
So they're on the train and then we see like the wind starting to kick up and we cut to a park in Philadelphia when the wind kicks up again. And it's the same scene that we saw in New York. People start killing themselves. There's a scene where a cop has a gun. He shoots himself in the head. He drops the gun. Somebody else gets out of the car, picks up the gun, does it again. And like it happens like three times because people see the opportunity to take their life. So then we cut back to the train. Alma is calling Joey, the guy that is trying to get a hold of her on the phone, and tells him to stop calling her. We ate tiramisu together. That's it. I told you that would be it. And then that's it. And then He mentions like it's happening in Philly too. And she's stressed, but she doesn't share that information because her tiramisu guilt is so bad.
She doesn't like her husband that much.
Yeah. So they learn that Philadelphia is being attacked as well. The train stops in a small town. The train service was disconnected because they quote unquote lost connection with everybody. Jess, the little girl, is whispering to her dad that she's scared and she doesn't like it here. And Julian apologizes for the little girl whispering to Alma. And Alma decides to hit us with the line, "We're so much the same, Jess. I don't like to show my emotions either."
Or she's just a scared little girl.
So,
but she mentioned several times that she doesn't like to show her emotions.
It's so bad. So they all go to a diner and Elliot is talking to Jess, trying to cheer her up, showing her a mood ring that he has and talking about the energies people have and is just trying to cheer her up or whatever. Then the woman next to him holds up her iPhone first gen. I literally have one of these still. I still have my first fucking phone. It's in the house. I tried to find it before because it's in a box. I have one of these. I was like, I have that. It's 2008 again. It's great. But she holds up her phone, iPhone, first gen phone, and we see a video of a man feeding himself to lions at the zoo.
Yep. Really.
My commentary here is, do arms really come off that easy? Somebody tell me? Honestly, I'm curious. Like,
I don't think so.
Can they just come off but I'm not pulled?
Like, he's literally, it was, like, clearly just Velcro. Like, he doesn't, like, move. Like, he doesn't get pulled at all.
His body doesn't move. His arm just comes off. I need, Mythbusters aren't real anymore. Like, that show's done. So I just need somebody to tell me how much it would take. Because you do see that in some horror movies where, like, somebody's arm just gets, like, yoinked. And it's like, is it that easy? No, I need to
know. I think you would go with it until you couldn't go with it anymore.
And then maybe it would come off. But anyways, we cut to a little later and someone is saying, we're not sure it's a terrorist attack anymore. We're only having issues in the Northeast. And then the power goes out, but also a battery-powered clock on the wall goes out. It just stops ticking.
I was like, are the plants cutting the power? That's what I was like, what?
I don't. The power goes out. In that area, I can only imagine like there's an accident that affects the power grid and there's no people there to fix it. Like, I literally don't know
somebody
how the plants cut the power.
Into whatever.
Yeah,
did
something. Everybody decides they need to get out of town and move like away from big crowds. They try and catch a ride with a bunch of people. They keep being told no, and eventually Elliot finds a ride with literally the coolest people in the entire fucking movie.
Yep.
Julian decides at this moment that he is going to abandon his child to go try and find his wife.
That he can't get a hold of.
For more than 2 hours when this shit is happening. But he's going to go. Sai and I were watching this together and we both agreed. Was like, I would be so fucking mad at you. Yeah. Absolutely fucking not. Especially because you know that these two aren't in like any kind of like stable situation.
And they're
right?
Not,
like, Alma's not like the best possible alternative parent.
No. I'm going to leave you with these two idiots. Good luck, right. Jess.
Don't fucking leave my kid with an idiot. Like, no. I'm also probably dead. So stop.
Yeah.
Anyways, he makes a poor choice. So Plant Man and Plant Lady, who are the coolest people in the fucking movie pull up in their Jeep and they're like, yeah, you guys need a ride. You know, we've got room, blah, blah, blah. So they get in the car with them and Plant Man talks about how fucking cool plants are because they are fucking cool. But they treat him like he's bananas in the movie. And he does have a weird situation where he's like, we're going to bring the hot dogs. You like hot dogs, right? Which is just because the dialogue is fucking weird.
I would say, I think that's just M. Night being weird guy.
Yeah. And they try and make him seem weird in the movie. Like, Alma literally does like the circle your finger trying to indicate like this person's not right hand movement. She's the fucking worst.
Says Alma.
Yeah, right. Like, Alma's the fucking worst. So we cut to Julian and get a scene where they're trying to not let air into the car because they've arrived at like the Princeton area.
They have a soft top Jeep that they think is going to be fucking airtight. A soft top Jeep.
Yep. And there's a bunch of them packed in there and there's a bunch of people who have hung themselves from trees and somebody in the back is freaking out and screaming and they're like, don't let the air get in, close the vents. And
that's not how that works.
He catches a hole in the soft top and he doesn't just put his fucking thumb up or your hand. None of it. He just stares at it and then tries to calm down the girl in the back by asking her a math problem. Do you fucking want to know quickest way to set me up?
Also, the most genuine reaction. The girl goes, what?
Yeah. 10, I guess. Like 20? Yeah. Like, why are we doing this? This isn't helping me. And this is just fucking weird. My note here is, do not ask me a math question. We're going to fucking die. So the guy driving the Jeep gets affected by evil plant pollen and runs the Jeep very quickly into a tree. He gets thrown out of the Jeep. We're imagining that people in the back probably didn't survive, but Julian does get out of the car. He sits down on the ground, takes some of the glass from the accident, and cuts his wrists. We cut back to the plant people. So we've got Alma, Elliot, Jess, and Plant Man, Plant Woman in the car. And they're talking about how they've just got to get like 90 miles away to get out of the radius that's been, you know, indicated. This is where this issue is happening. But they keep going down a road and they find that the road is blocked by a bunch of dead bodies. So they turn around, they get to a crossroad and attempt to take a different route. But then there's cars and people coming from every alternate route saying, oh no, it's there too. And so they're just kind of stuck. At this point, we meet Private Oster as well, who's an army guy from an army base nearby and is trying to like coordinate everybody and yada, yada, yada. We get a phone call from a girl to her mom. Girl is at Princeton. Everybody is dead outside. Or that's where Julian went. So all the other characters realize that he's dead. Plant Man hits us with some facts again. Plants are communicating with chemicals to protect themselves because plants are the fucking best.
What are the plants producing though? All of the plants?
Yeah.
Like the grass and everything, they're all producing the same thing?
Yeah, somehow.
That's not how that works.
Somehow.
That's why I was like, maybe it was like one cactus or something. You know what I mean? Like one kind of plant.
They can figure it out.
The begonias are coming for us.
You get the trees involved and you get the grass involved and you fucked, right? Like,
yeah.
Except for maybe like non-grassy places.
Except like less fucked. Especially like grass, like yard grass. I think it's like dependent on people. Kind of situation. Like, I feel like it's like a, I don't know if you can domesticate a plant, but it's not like a wild plant.
I mean, the ones that we've bred to be like, look at how pretty my lawn is, is
not different, like grass in a field.
Yeah, like regular old,
but like neighborhood
OG grass, you know, if it's involved, you're fucked. But also, like, yeah, maybe they just all learned to chemical the same way. I'm here for it. If there is something like histoplasmosis, but for plants, I have it fully.
Also, like,
fully.
Are they implying that the bees are disappearing because the plants are trying to defend themselves? Because that's not how that relationship works.
I think that was supposed to, and this is me guessing because it's an M. Night movie, but I think that was supposed to be like a comment on human interaction damaging nature to the point of the bees disappearing.
Okay.
Not
okay.
That the plants are murdering the bees.
I was like, the plants and the bees like each other. Okay. I was like, what's the logic here?
Yeah, the plants are like, not my bees. And then they're swinging back. So.
Fair. Okay, not my bees.
Yeah, not my bees. attacks are moving to smaller and smaller populations, from big to small. In a number of his interviews, M. Night's like, this movie was so different because instead of it starting in a small location and spreading, I started in a big location and then started coming down to smaller. Okay.
Okay, bud.
Okay. So they split into two groups to try and keep the numbers small. Alma admits while they're walking that she went and got tiramisu with Joey because she thinks they're going to die. That's why she says, she's like, I feel guilty. If we're going to die, I want you to know.
I'd be like, this is not the time or place. I've decided in life or death situations, I have no tolerance for anything other than not dying. Every time I watch one of these movies, I'm like, no, I don't have fucking time for you to be screaming and acting fucking crazy. I don't care what you did with Joey. Yeah. I don't give a fuck what you did with Joey.
We have to fucking live right now. We'll deal with you and Joey later.
Yeah.
Don't make me more emotionally distraught by saying some fucking out-of-pocket shit.
I'm going to push you into a bush now.
Yes.
Like, get out of here.
Yep. Get her, waving my arms, stomping my feet. Come, like, I'm fucking, here we go. So they split into two groups, but one of the groups is bigger. And so the bigger groups, they get got. Like, they get taken out by the plants. And this is where we get another really fucking frustrating scene, because Alma and the people that they're with start, like, yelling at Elliot as the teacher to be like, what do we do? We have to intervene. They're dying over there. We
are
have
you
going to
fight
something.
The pollen?
We're not assholes. We have to intervene. Tell us what to do.
Hey, Alma, go over there, babe.
Yeah.
By all means, go over there and save those people. Go for it.
Yep.
I'm going to go this way.
Why do we got to turn to Dude Man Guy to be like, Dude Man Guy, you must know the things.
And poor Elliot's like, I'm a science teacher at a public school. What do you want me to do?
This is the first time I'm saying this too, guys. Yeah. Like, fuck. So I was just demanding they do something, but it was also not doing anything. So, okay, girl, tell us what to do. And then Elliot gives us the line, be scientific, douchebag. So, and then he decides that it is the plants. What's that?
He says that to himself.
Yes. He says it to himself.
Yeah.
So they decide it is the plants, and that it's attacking smaller and smaller populations. So they need to break off even further. And as they're discussing this, the wind comes. And so everybody like spreads out, and it's now Alma, Elliot, Jess, and two teenagers for like the next 10 minutes. They find a model home and are looking for a map to get to a less populated area. We get the line that it's probably safe to get away from people right now, but like literally always though, right? Like,
yeah,
that's just, we also get the scene at this model home where Elliot talked to a plastic plant.
I thought that was kind of funny. He's like trying to talk to it like the plant guy was talking to his plants, and then he goes, oh, this is plastic. That's some shit I would do.
Like, and then like that's a thing though, like if this was a horror comedy, you know what I mean? Like, it would have been fine. It would have been like, that's perfect in a horror comedy. This is not perfect in like something that's like, trying to be sincere.
Like, horror movies need like breaks in the tension or whatever. But, like, if you are saying that you were doing that, that's the only, like, intentionally kind of funny thing that happens. Mm-hmm.
So they leave the model home because people are coming. And they turn around to look at the model home. And there's two groups that converge together while going to the model home. The plants decide that's too many people together. So they all get got too. While they're walking away, the teens are advising, giving love advice to Elliot on the walk to a seemingly abandoned home. They find a radio along the way that telling everybody that they should go west. And then Elliot goes to Alma and says, if we are going to die, I want you to know something too. I wanted to talk to this cute pharmacist because she was cute and hot and I didn't even have a cough, but I almost spent $6 to impress her on some superfluous cough syrup. And Alma just goes, are you joking? And he's like, of course I'm fucking joking. Like, yes, that's a joke.
He's trying. I guess he's trying to, like, lighten everybody up a little bit. I don't know.
He's trying to be like, you got dessert with somebody. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But also, like,
I think the bigger deal is you were completely checked out of our relationship.
Yeah. Like, the bigger deal is that. It's not the tiramisu. You only told me because you thought that we were going to die. The bigger deal is that you're not communicating that you did that. Like,
the bigger deal is I really truly don't think you like me that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the bigger deal, really.
So they find a house. They think it's abandoned. It's not. The homeowners don't want to let them in. So the teens start trying to break in. And this is when we decided that it was appropriate to use a shotgun to murder two teenagers.
Yeah.
Graphically. So that happens.
It didn't have to happen.
Before they're murdered, I just also backtracking a little. My note is fucking brutal. Also, Elliot sings a song to try and convince them that they're fine inside the house before they start shooting people.
Yeah, I think maybe he's like, we're not like zombies or taken over, like, because they don't know like how people get affected by it, I guess.
But also weird.
I don't know, man.
So while they're leaving, after the teenagers got murdered, we cut into the home and we see two people sitting knitting with masks on. Like,
I like that shot.
On. Yeah, I mean, it's not like a shot, you know?
Yeah, he's good at a shot. He does kill a shot here and there.
And it's like cutting between this home and other homes, and it's like a news report. And they've decided that that's going to peak in the morning because this kind of thing happens in waves, even though we've never seen it before, but all right.
Yeah.
Some folks are saying maybe it's the CIA because there's a CIA base in that area and they were working on some drug that could do this. They finally get to another house in the middle of nowhere and they meet Mrs. Jones. We get the line, why are you eyeing my lemon drink?
Yeah, this lady is
that,
like,
on a t-shirt, honestly, though. Because, like,
why are you on my lemon drink?
Because, like, what?
I have relatives that speak like that. I would probably say that. I think.
Yeah, but, like, in the context of this movie, like, you just want, you know what I mean? Like,
she's extremely paranoid and hates everything, but also invites him to stay the night.
Yes.
So I don't get what we're going for here.
Yes. I mean, I don't get what we're going for here is also something else that should be on a t-shirt that I would wear. I don't get what we're going for here.
Merch. I don't get what we're going for here.
Jones invites them in for supper. Elliot doesn't say anything in their entire interaction. They're eating supper with Miss Jones, who doesn't have a TV, doesn't want to know what's going on, gets really defensive. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. They're having a conversation about the house and the speaking tube in the house that goes to, like, this, it's called Spring House in the back, and there's like a tube that makes it so you can talk to people in the house. Jones goes off about this thing, like, who's chasing who? And Elliot's like, I'm chasing her. And it's like, yeah, she doesn't want to be caught by you, dude. Like, it's not a, haha, will you catch me? It's literally just, she's not interested, but all right. Then Jess tries to take a biscuit from the table and Miss Jones smacks the fuck out of her hand and just says, we don't take things that aren't ours. Girl, you're at a dinner table where you were sharing your food. It is not odd that that child went to reach for one of those. She didn't go into your kitchen through your cupboards and find something.
Half the time when you say Jess, I think of Zooey Deschanel's character in New Girl.
Same.
So I'm like, wait, I'm like, that's a little girl.
Yeah. Yep. So smacks her hand. Jones says she doesn't want to know what's going on in the world. World don't care about me. I don't care about it.
Then why did you invite these people into your house and then act insane?
Like, terrifying.
Yeah.
She says, okay, you can stay the night. So they're whispering in the room about Jones smacking Jess. And there is a scene, like, they're still having that conversation at dinner before they go to bed, where she smacks the girl, tells her, don't take things that aren't yours, and then waits a few minutes to give her a cookie after, or, like, the biscuit after. And it's like, I don't know if we were trying to say that she is, like, inconsistent, or that's the way that she's teaching that kid. But, like,
oh, that's like
the two
adults
upbringing that are supposed to be responsible for this child just let her get smacked by a stranger.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. In, like, a life or death situation, I'd be like, listen, you're, like, 80 years old. I'm just going to tie you to this chair, and then we'll let you go.
Yeah.
Later.
But you can't be hitting my kid.
We're going to take your some of this food since you're clearly not okay. And we will be on our way.
Yep. But we're not staying the night with you here.
No.
Otherwise, we're sleeping in shifts. Like, I don't know. What this is fucking weird. So they're, Elliot and Alma are talking, like, whispering to each other, like, did you see that she smacked her? Who smacks a kid like that? And then Miss Jones is in the hallway and just goes, I hear you whispering. Are you planning on murdering me in my sleep? And then Mark Wahlberg's character just goes, what? No.
Just like in the same cadence has had the whole movie. And he's just like, he's sincerely like, what? No. I would never, but it's so weird. And then the scene just ends.
Like a yes, it sounds like
oh, for sure.
Me? No, like it.
I would never.
And then the scene just ends, like you said. And then it's the morning, and this is when we're supposed to see it peak or whatever. And Alma just takes Jess outside. She doesn't know, right? Like those characters didn't see that news report, which is weird that we did in the way that this is shot. But all right.
But the big reason they're still at that lady's house, Mrs. Jones' house, is because they're like, we can't leave this house. It's safe. And they're tolerating her being that way because it's safe. But in all of her wisdom, Alma goes, let's go out across the yard and go play in the other building.
Yep. We're just going to go outside where the danger is. I'm going to take this 8-year-old child and I'm not going to tell Elliot. I'm just going to let him sleep. Mm-hmm. We're in a survival situation, ma'am. But Elliot has a confrontation with Miss Jones because he goes to try and find her and kind of like clear the air, or whatever. And she freaks out, and her anger, her anger is so fucking spot on. That character legitimately scares me. Like, that character was like, oh God, like, ooh, it's scary. She then tells them they have to leave, and Miss Jones goes to go to her garden and start like picking food or whatever. And she starts acting funny because the plants got her. And now it's just one person outside that's being murdered by the plants.
Except for Jess and Alma.
Yeah. Yep.
When they went outside.
They went outside and they went to the house and they were fine. But then Miss Jones goes outside to be in her garden and the wind slightly moves and then she is murdered.
What are the logistics of this? At one point in time, the soldier is the one guy in between two groups of people and gets got.
Yep.
Anyway.
Some people just have worse allergies, I guess.
Like, how does this work? Yeah, right? Like, what?
So Miss Jones gets got, and then Elliot runs inside and like is looking for Alma and Jess, and Alma took Jess into the spring house, and Elliot just goes into like the like talking tube, close the windows, close the doors, stay inside. And Alma literally asks fucking why? She's like, right, why? What's going on?
Like, did you forget what we're doing? She's like a goldfish.
Yeah. Like, the absolute fuck, but okay. So they chat through the tube for a little bit, and they're like, I really wish you were here. I really miss you. They're reminiscing about their first date, and like, there's this mood ruin that Elliot's character has this entire time, and they're talking about how, like, I lied to you about what that color meant. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just a really awkward, weird conversation to have.
Yep.
You know, ta-da. And then they've only been separated for like what, like 5 minutes max, and then Elliot's like, I just want to be with you, and he goes outside and he's just like, I'm
if
gonna
we're
go
gonna
outside.
Die we're gonna die together. No, stay your ass in that fucking house,
right? Like, I didn't say that I'm gonna die. I didn't say that. I'm in and I'm tucked in and I'm hiding. Get the fuck back in that house. We're not So he goes outside. My note is, it's been 3 minutes, so get in the fucking house. And then, in all caps, my note is, then Alma takes Jess outside too. Excuse me?
Right. It's not like I'm going to come to the spring house. They decide to meet in between middle, in both buildings in the field with the child.
Yep.
Horrible fucking parents. Yep. Like, terrible adults.
Yes.
They just give in immediately.
Yeah, like fucking 3 minutes.
Like, holy shit.
So they, you know, they live because they have to, I guess. You know, the poison wind is gone by the time 3 minutes later goes by. And we get like a wide cut of them hugging each other in a field and swelling music and blah, 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 blah.
Another relationship is fixed.
Yes. Because they both were like, I guess I didn't die. I guess I should try and make this work. Like, I don't, like,
I guess
a near death experience is all that it took.
I love you again.
Yeah. So it's 3 months later. Only 3 months later. It's 3 months later. Yep. Elliot and Alma have adopted Jess, I guess. It just is fine.
The plants got her entire extended family.
Yes. Everybody was just...
And he's her legal godfather, apparently.
Yeah. So they're...
Anyway.
She's hers. Yeah. And she's getting ready to go to school. And Alma asks her, oh, are you okay? That's a loaded fucking
she's
question.
She's not okay.
She is not okay. But she's like, yes, Aunt Alma, I love you. And she's like, oh, and you can see that Alma's character is like, huh, maybe all I needed was the love of a child who can make me feel like the mother I'm supposed to be, to calm me down and decide I want to settle in this relationship.
You're not supposed to be a mother, Alma.
So Elliot walks her to the school bus. Scientist calls the event a plant version of Red Tide. It's an act of nature. We won't ever understand it. And the scientist is kind of billed as like, he's, you know, should be wearing a tin hat or whatever, because we've become a threat to the planet. And this is a warning. Most people believe it's the government because it happened in the U.S. But if it had happened anywhere else, they wouldn't, which is not.
What?
But okay.
There's governments everywhere.
Like a thing. So Alma is taking a pregnancy test, cut back to their apartment. Ta-da! She's pregnant, which is like the general trope of like an unsettled woman who must be fulfilled by having a kid, and that will settle her into her life. Like
a kid will settle her ass down. It will not.
Yeah. It's just
it will not.
You're just it fucking like no. And like they just, if she doesn't like him, that's fine. Just because he's relatively okay in this universe doesn't mean you have to like somebody.
You know what doesn't fix a fucking relationship? A kid.
Yeah, man.
Holy shit. But yeah. At this point, Russo yelled from the bed, fuck, she has COVID. Because it was the two lines. And I was like, stop.
Oh, no.
Babies are kind of like COVID, I guess.
Oh, no.
No, they're not.
Russo is the best.
JK.
Anyways, so Alma tells Elliot, but we don't really hear it. It's just like she walks out and it's just that look to him and his look to her and da-da-da-da, she's pregnant. And then we cut from them to France and we're in a park and the event happens again. There's screams and folks are acting not right and then they start killing themselves and the movie ends.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know.
Let's bring a baby into this world where we can randomly be killed by plants at any point in time.
Yeah, she found her purpose. She just needed to be a mother.
No, she didn't. She needed to be single.
She just needed to go be fucking weird. Go be weird.
I can't imagine her like
tiramisu.
I can't imagine that character making a bottle or like dealing with like
diapers.
Cradle cap or cock or anything.
Yeah. She would just turn to Ellie and be like,
"Do
this. I feel like I'm gonna die, so you should know that I also went for ice cream with Joey." As she's just changing a diaper, like she
5 years later. It's single dad Elliot with these two kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not a good, it's a trope. It's not a, it's not
the
my
worst
favorite
fucking trope in the world.
It's just not my favorite one. By any means. I have a note. The next line I have here is, so what did you think? But I feel like everybody knows what we thought. So any final thoughts before I talk to you about things that I'm actually very excited about?
No, for the record, I like The Sixth Sense, although I haven't seen it in a long time, so maybe it's
maybe
fucking super weird. I don't know.
I didn't realize how big of a catalog M. Night has.
Did you see Split?
I
was
did.
It good?
It wasn't bad.
I haven't seen it because I've sworn off all M. Night Shyamalan movies.
It wasn't bad. The acting was good. You can tell it's a Shum. You can tell, but it's not bad.
Okay.
It's not this.
It's not this, because the last time The Visit, people were like, this is his comeback. And all I know about that movie is I think a kid has to eat poop. And I went, I don't think that's his comeback. But all right.
Yeah, I didn't realize how big his catalog was when I was sitting there looking at it. And I was like, yeah, I could make Courtney watch every M. Night movie. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fucking do that. Because I don't want to do that.
No.
I don't want to do that to listeners. Like,
I think we're getting to my limit of M. Night Shyamalan movies I have seen, though.
Yeah.
So, because I very quickly was like, I think I'm done here.
This is not for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready to talk about some of the ways that our real life botanical brethren can kill us?
Fuck yes. I'm very into this.
Yes, I love plants. And so I have three for us today, which kind of coincide with some of the symptoms and situations that we saw in The Happening. We're going to jump into the first one. The first one I have for us is locally growing near to Courtney and I.
Yeah.
And a couple other states in the United States. And it is our interesting comrade, the giant hogweed. So giant hogweed is a member of the carrot family, initially gained popularity as a garden ornamental due to its resemblance to a Queen Anne's lace, which is that lacy white flower that you're going to see like in wildflower fields. And like, it's really pretty. It blows in the wind. It's very delicate, blah, blah, blah.
I'm looking up pictures of giant hogweed. I've definitely have fucked with that plant as a child, I think, or close to.
I think that it came to Michigan, like officially, I think it was the early 2000s, but there has been reports of it being spotted as early as like 85 in Michigan and some areas.
But it looks like another plant. So maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
It looks like, so it's a carrot family. So the same thing as like, oh my God.
It's really big.
It's the cow killing plants and carrots. And I can't pronounce it. It starts with an A. It's just big and kind of pretty, and people were like, we should plant this.
It is really big.
It has an ability to spread very rapidly, so it's established itself, even though people are trying to eradicate it, it's established itself in roadside ditches, in streams, in generally less populated fields and areas, and can be found in at least 10 states right now, but is rapidly spreading across the East Coast. It's recognizable by a bright green stem, which can measure between 3 and 8 centimeters in diameter. 3 centimeters is a little bit more than an inch, so relatively big in diameter for the stem. It's covered in dark reddish purple small spots and coarse white hairs that are at like the base of like where the leaves grow from. Giant hogweed can reach heights of more than 10 feet pretty easily, 2 to 5.5 meters. They're easily identified in late spring and midsummer because that's when they're getting quite big. Hogweed produces a really, really pretty upside down umbrella shaped flower. So like a Queen Anne's lace kind of situation. But despite being very pretty, giant hogweed poses a significant threat due to its phototoxic sap and its capability to cause severe fucking burns to human skin when the sap is on the human skin and exposed to sunlight. So hogweed sap contains a family of compounds known as, I looked up this word a million times. None of the pronunciation keys on the internet worked, and I can't say it. So I'm going to spell it, and then I'm going to nickname it. So it is F-U-R-A-N. O-C-O-U-M-A-R-I-N-S. Fricomarians. So we're just going to call them Marians for the purpose of me talking. But these compounds are very likely the key to the effects of the hogweed sap. And they're found throughout the entire plant. So it's not just breaking off the sap and you're going to have a bad time. It's in the flowers. It's in the stems. It's in the roots. It's in the seeds. Anywhere in the plant, but is most highly concentrated in the leaves themselves. So the phototoxic effects are due to the interaction that this compound has with DNA when it is also exposed to UV light at a specific wavelength. There's a lot of science around it, but basically it's going to amplify the UV so strongly while also reducing your skin's ability to protect itself from UV that it causes, it's not like a chemical burn in the regular way. It causes your skin to not be able to protect itself from the sun.
Oh my God.
That's why it fucking burns you.
Wow. Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. So even brief contact with one of these can cause an exceptionally bad time, leading to second and third degree burns. Even after healing, some studies have shown that the skin that was burned stays sensitive to sunlight for years and years and years, which of anybody that's had a pretty bad burn knows that that skin is going to be sensitive. This is specifically over and above the sensitivity that you would have gotten from a typical burn not involved with hogweed.
Oh my God.
So it like fucks your skin's DNA up to be like, you, the sun hates you now. Congrats. If you get the sap near your eyes, on your face, it can fully blind you. Like it could just, you're blind now.
Yikes.
So given the hazards associated with the sap, removing the hogweed can be exceptionally dangerous. You should never burn hogweed because that smoke's going to give you a bad time. And you should never compost it because it's just going to affect the entirety of your compost. The safest method for eradication of a giant hogweed involves pulling the plant while it's still young and small. So finding it early. And then ensuring that every part of the plant is sealed in a black trash bag. And you just tie it off until you're pretty sure that it's so dry that it's actually dead. And then you can dispose of it. Like, you have to, like, murder it. So the Michigan, the current policy for this plant is search and destroy. Like, you absolutely need to be removing this plant at every safe opportunity that you get is a bad time.
Yeah.
So most recent maps don't show it in the counties that are closest to us, but it's only two counties over. So it's not here or the next, but it is in the following. So.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I'm not going to touch. See, that's why I don't fuck with plants. Well, I fuck with plants. Like, I like plants, but I don't touch a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go fuck with a hogweed.
I'm also extremely allergic to poison ivy, so
yes,
I try not to avoid all that. Yeah, I was thinking of cow parsnips. That's
yes, so cow parsnips of. Are another. I didn't go into depth too much about it in here, but the cow parsnip is the one that looks like a wild carrot. And if you are like a backyard forager and you don't have a lot of experience, or even like super experienced foragers get duped by that parsnip, and you think it's a wild carrot and you eat it, and you will, like, it will kill you. Like, it is exceptionally toxic.
Foraging is dangerous work, guys.
Yes. Yep. So, you know, don't, unless you are absolutely fucking sure, or preferably you know where that plant originated from, you planted it or are aware of what's been going on in the land in a while, maybe don't just eat random things.
Please. Yes, don't. I mean, I ate random. Man, I'm a lucky kid. I would just eat random grass and shit when I was a kid, man. Uh-huh. I was just left unattended in a yard, just pulling up plants and putting them in my mouth.
Well, our next lethal leafy friend, I don't even think that you'd get it to your mouth before you realize that you had picked up something you probably shouldn't have touched.
Oh, that's probably good.
This plant is called a gimpy gimpy. And that's G-Y-M-P-I-E. It is not related to the derogatory slur. Like, that's not what that is. It is also colloquially called the suicide plant.
Oh.
So you need to be exceptionally wary of this seemingly harmless plant. It's from the nettle family. It's extremely unassuming. It's got heart-shaped leaves and is frequently encountered in the rainforests of Australia, the Moluccas, and in Indonesia in general. However, don't be deceived by its pretty simple appearance. Its foliage is adorned with tiny, hollow, hypodermic needle-like hairs that deliver an exceptionally potent neurotoxin capable of inducing literally unbearable pain.
Oh, is that why it's called what it's called?
Yes.
Because you would rather just not be
You would rather just die. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I would, you should look up the picture of it really fast if you didn't, because I saw this picture and I was like, before I was like, where is this located? Like the green heart-shaped leaf is such a common leaf type. Like it's just a really,
yeah.
Like I was like, oh fuck, do I need to be careful? And I was like, no, I don't live in Australia. So no. But holy fuck. So the pain that it causes can be so intense that
it looks almost like a perilla leaf that people like eat.
Yes, almost. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm just looking
at
all the ways I could accidentally die.
So the pain from this is so intense that aside from causing like I need to end my life pain in humans, the stress and pain that it can cause to other domesticated animals, so dogs and horses, is so bad that it's known to just like kind of give them like a stress heart attack because they're in so much pain.
Oh.
And they unfortunately die. So exceptionally dangerous plant for almost all involved. One really common story, but doesn't have like a, this happened to, you know, John Smith, da 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 da, is told in Australia. And it's basically, for some reason, somebody is out in, you know, the woods in the rainforest and needs to use the restroom, accidentally uses the Gibby Gibby plant to wipe after eliminating in the outdoors. And the story goes that the pain of this mistake was so severe that he would rather end his life than continue to bear the pain.
Just don't wipe. You're in the bush already. It's okay. Don't wipe.
Don't. Be very careful with what you're grabbing to wipe in the woods, y'all. Like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
So the active compound found in this plant, moroidin, M-O-R-O-I-D-I-N, is capable of inflicting torment on its victims for more than a year.
Oh, no.
It just continues to keep you in this pain. And I'll describe the pain in a minute if you are not so fucking careful with how you remove this from your skin. So there's like the needles and there's like the hairs in it. And if you just wipe at it really fast, you're going to break off your ability to actually remove it from your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Even dried specimens of this plant have retained their potent sting for fucking decades. So there's not a good way to just be like, it's neutralized either. And some newer research into this plant points to its neurotoxin being similar to that of the cone snail. So it's just bad fucking time.
That's a mean ass plant.
Yeah. So the first thing that you'll feel if you have an unfortunate occurrence with this plant is an intense burning sensation. And this is going to grow over the next half hour or so, becoming more and more and more painful. Shortly after this, your joints are going to start to ache. You're going to get swelling in your armpits, in like the lymphatic area of your armpits. And that particular pain has been described as almost as painful as the original sting itself with the burning situation. In severe cases, this pain, which again can last for months and months and months into like years, plural in one case, that you're just in this pain, right? Like it's not going away. But in more severe cases, instead of just living with this pain, you go into shock and shock kills you because the pain is so intense.
Jesus Christ.
Inhaling floating hairs can cause continuous sneezing, rashes, nosebleed, pain in your sinuses like this. And overall, the effect has been likened to being burnt with hot acid while being simultaneously electrocuted.
Oh, Jesus.
Interestingly, the plant does serve as a food source for some small birds and some small mammals who do not seem affected at all by this type of toxin.
It's evolution, baby.
Yes. And then it's also one term that's been coined when talking about this plant is once stung, never forgotten. Like you just will never forget that you've done this.
Yeah.
And then continuing in the realm of leave this plant the fuck alone, please never do this. Warning, the fruits themselves from this plant are actually edible to humans.
Oh, okay.
Although they've been described as bland, and most people say it's not worth the potential life hazard of collecting this fruit, you have to Because the fruit on the outside is still covered in the toxic hypodermic nail neurotoxin. So the safest method of harvesting that fruit is to try and remove all of those hairs off using some sticks to knock it down off the plant and then trying to remove the fur. And then handling them with exceptionally thick gloves to try and rub off the needles further. But the last step is it has to be rubbed with your bare hands because you don't want to accidentally ingest one of the needles.
It's not worth it.
No, that's like those, for that's a like bland people that, piece of fruit.
It's like people who eat puffer fish. Not worth it, dog.
Like, why? Just, like, it's just...
Don't do it. Don't do
so,
it.
So, yeah, that's a gimpy gimpy. And that is aka otherwise known as suicide plants. It is one of two stinging types of trees that you can be found kind of in the same area. The other one I didn't go into super depth with is the giant stinging tree. Also a really bad fucking time. Their families, their home, like their, you know, siblings, its method and mode is a little bit different, but like, just leave these fucking trees alone. Just spikes. They clearly are like, don't fucking touch me. There's a video that I saw, and I'm not going to put that in the notes because honestly, I don't really think they should get additional views, but where somebody got a hold of this plant as like a dare and decided to like grab it with his hand to see what happens. It's like, don't fucking do that, y'all. This is a bad fucking idea. Stay away from these plants.
Why are people so dumb?
You know, I don't know.
I get it. I guess sometimes you just got to touch the butt. Sometimes the butt will touch you back real hard.
So that is a gimpy gimpy. Don't touch it. Don't go near it. Leave it alone. And our next leave it alone fatal plant is none other than the McNeil tree. So that is M-A-N-C-H-I-N-E-E-L, McNeil tree, which produces beech apple, a.k.a. the death apple. Have you heard of this one?
No.
It's technically endangered, because at least in the United States, because they've decided that it needed to be eradicated. But my favorite line of all of my research for this week is, it may be endangered, but so is anybody who messes with it. I was like, yes, I love this line. So McNeil trees are infamous within their natural environments. They typically thrive in sandy soils and mangrove forest regions of South Florida, the Caribbean, Central America, and Northern South America. In many areas, warning signs are posted to alert people to the dangers of this tree. While instances of poisoning from this tree have historically affected conquistadors, colonizers, tourists, and some literary figures,
McNeil
remains relatively obscure, despite apparently holding the Guinness World Record for being the most dangerous tree, which seems to have been maybe like interpreted because some colonizers arrived and decided that they were going to try and eat this fruit, which they knew nothing about after not talking to the people who actually lived in that area. And then they were like, oh, it's a dangerous tree. It must be murdered.
Yeah, I digress. Just leave it alone. I mean, the little fruits look good.
But it just looks like little green crab apples. So The primary danger of this tree lies in its fruits, little green crab apples, measuring 1 or 2 inches in diameter, really just look like an apple. But despite their sweet fragrance, these fruits will induce intense hours of pain and in some severe cases prove fatal after one bite of the fruit. So in a 2000 article published by the British Medical Journal, radiologist Nicola Strickland recounted an incident where she and a friend impulsively sampled the fruit. Initially, they found it to be slightly sweet. It was kind of pleasant. It's like apples, fruits, cool. And then a few moments later, they started experiencing a particularly peppery sensation in their mouths, which escalated to burning, a tearing discomfort, and throat constriction. The symptoms intensified over the next few hours, making swallowing food impossible due to excruciating pain and a sensation of a large obstruction in their throat. Much like our hogweed and the Gimpy Gimpy, every part of this tree contains toxins. Every part. You're not getting away with anything. And the Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences cautioned that contact or ingestion of any portion of this tree could be lethal. So don't fuck with it. Again, bark, leaves, sap. A single drop of which of the sap can also cause severe burns, much like the hogweed. Even without direct contact, individuals and even reportedly car paint have suffered burns from the corrosive sap. So that's why lots of these trees now have signs near them that say, do not stand anywhere near this tree when it's raining, because it'll aerosolize, it'll cotton the rain, it'll get pushed into the air, and you could accidentally breathe in or have a droplet of poison sap touch you.
It's crazy.
In an area that rains nearly every day, don't be near this tree when it rains.
Don't run under this fucking tree. It does not like you.
Yes. Additionally, burning the wood from this tree releases toxins that cause blindness. Don't do that. And while most plant toxins often evolve, they say, in a as like a defensive mechanism over time, the extreme toxicity of the McNeil remains kind of weird to folks that have studied it. I don't know in which capacity that they've studied it, if they've studied it just as like a tree that's dangerous, if they've actually looked at it in its environment and with its purposes, but apparently it is so toxic to most animals that they're like, this really is strange, because typically there's some way for it to spread its fruit.
Yeah.
And they've kind of landed on the idea that it typically is in like a sandy coastal area. So kind of like mangroves and stuff, they will drop their apple, and the apple, they don't want it to be eaten because they want it to float with the tides and have the seed plant that way.
Okay.
Is an idea. So they, you know, lots of animals dying in contact with this tree isn't actually counterproductive for this tree, because it's like, don't touch my fruit. It wants to go swimming.
Okay, I was thinking like maybe it had like one animal that liked it and it's dead. It does. But
I'll tell you. Oh, okay. Him. He's the most metal. So the McNeil also provides some advantages to humans. Typically, it's like a robust shrub. It's got potential to reach 50 feet in height, which is kind of useful when you're in the Caribbean and you don't have a whole lot of access to like trees that are easy or good for timber. Mm. It's actually good for making things with, like, it's a good solid wood for making things with if you can get past the fact that the sap and everything is going to fucking kill you. So despite inherent risks, there have been developed ways that people can use the wood to make furniture and other things in that area, and they are very meticulous with these techniques to make sure that they are harvesting the wood in a safe-ish way, sun drying it to mitigate any effects from the poisonous sap, and then working with it. So people in the area have learned to work with the tree in a less toxic way because they live with the tree. It's not an invasive species like the hogweed. And then native folks to the area have history of incorporating its sap into traditional medicine, helping with things like edema, and then using some of it as a diuretic. There are uses. There is some stories about people native to the land using the sap in their weapons to injure other folks. I was hesitant to present that as fact, to be quite frank, because a lot of the times those stories are written by people who want to make it seem like the native folks were just out to get them. And I didn't find any resources that I was like, I feel comfortable with this. So that's something that you'll frequently see in articles, is that like, it was used to kill people. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I would just check. Not saying it's not true. I would just check your sources. Despite being toxic to birds and numerous other animals, the McNeil's sap appears to have little effect on certain creatures. For instance, the Gaboro, also known as the striped iguana, native to Central and South America, is documented to absolutely love the fruit of this tree. Occasionally they inhabit the branches, and they're just safe because nobody wants to fuck with that tree, and that tree doesn't fuck with iguanas.
He's maybe a that's like their
metal iguana.
Their symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. I just have iguana in a death tree with a bunch of E's. I don't know why.
It's like a band.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Iguana in a death tree. So the Mameka eel isn't an invasive species, that, like I said. And although many efforts were originally made to eradicate it from the United States because just so much of things, a small number of them did survive. So they are now on the endangered list. So if you are walking around on the beach, happen to find a small green apple tree, maybe just let the iguanas have it.
Don't touch it. Don't eat random shit. It's not for you. Just don't do that. Unless you were literally like a professional forager and you know what the fuck you're doing, don't do it.
Right.
Don't like, put random then, shit in your mouth.
Like professional foragers also know that there's going to be dangerous to things that have lookalikes and that kind of stuff, right? Like just understand that not everything in the world was made for us.
No.
You know what I mean? Like fundamentally, lots of things were not made for us, and don't put it in your mouth. Like
that is not the go-to. Your first instinct should not be put this in my mouth.
Yeah, I'm gonna eat it.
I'm gonna eat it.
But there are those are the three that I wanted to highlight today. But there are many, many plants out there that can just cause you to have a real fucking bad time. Wolvesbane, aka monkhood, was another one that almost made the list because that's got a pretty flower and you're gonna fucking die. There are a lot of plants out there that if you are interested in learning more about how they've developed, why they've developed, things that they can do to people, I would definitely encourage you to do that. It's really good to know about plants that exist because there's a reason that they have those toxins. And there's so much that we can fucking learn from them other than, it burned me, murder it. So that's my PSA on safely finding information. Maybe don't play fuck around and find out with some plants.
Just because it's not for you doesn't mean it shouldn't exist.
Right.
Just saying.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. But yeah, that's that on that. Those are my murder plant friends that I'm highlighting. I did see... Listen, I'm saying all this, right? Like, and I won't. I'm not going to do this. But I did see somebody who cultivated a gimpy gimpy in a pot to keep as a plant. I'm not doing it. She's a scientist. Like, there was a whole purpose to it. I'm just saying it's possible. And the chaos part of me was like, I could do that. And then I remember when we went to that greenhouse recently and there was a very spiky looking plant and I almost couldn't stop myself from touching it. So that's not going to happen. Like just.
No, buddy, don't do that. And then just if you want to forage, you have to be like, don't be like the lady who was poisoning her family with like jack-o'-lantern mushrooms or something. She thought it was chicken of the woods or I don't know if that's like fatal, but like, don't do that, please.
Yeah, there was another situation in one of the internet groups that I float around in where somebody misidentified mullein and it was actually foxglove and administering it as a inhalant to help their family with some like respiratory distress that they were going through.
Yeah.
It's not going to help you.
You've got to be educated, guys.
Yeah. And
I know it's like trendy
on it. Yeah.
Yes. It's an actually useful skill. I know it's kind of trendy right now, but like you got to do your research. Always do your research. Respect nature and you'll be all right.
Yeah. Don't just eat random shit.
We just sound like two moms.
I know.
Don't eat random shit. Be educated.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, there's just a lot of lookalikes out there, and that's on purpose. You know, plants you know, deciding to defend themselves by looking like other things that are quite dangerous. So the summary is, it might not be made for you. It still deserves to exist. Don't put that random plant in your mouth, and don't wipe with something that you can't identify. You're going to have a bad day. What should we watch for next week?
We're going to watch 2021's The Deep House next week.
The Deep House?
The Deep House. Yep.
Nice. All right. Well, watch 2021's The Deep House for next week's episode. If you would like to hang out with us more, you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, mostly on Instagram. Instagram. You know what I mean. We also have an email, nothingscarierpodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to let us know things, send us updates, you know, whatever you like, just be kind over there. Other than that, thank you so much for listening. Please don't put random plants in your mouth. Survive the week, and we will talk with you more next week.
Bye.